The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Bottle of wine, fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me go home and start over. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio. Brought to you in part by Recovery Centers of America, the nationally recognized leader in drug and alcohol treatment, using proven evidence-based treatment, including 24/7 medically supervised detox, inpatient and outpatient options. You'll receive exceptional care from an expert team of master-level clinicians, physicians, nurses, and staff using 12-step methodology and medications. Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio. My name is Gary Hendler. I'm here with my co-host, Mark Sigmund. We're going to have another great show today, once again. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. But before we start the show, Mark and I would like to acknowledge the great stations across this country that carry Clean and Sober Radio. And some of them are WWNN West Palm Beach, Florida, WHFS Tampa, Florida, KDWN Las Vegas, Nevada, and we're broadcasting live right now out of the studios at WWDB AM Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mark, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. I was just going to add in there, we're broadcasting with snow on the ground, unlike Florida.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
That is exactly right. Hey, listen, before we start the show, we have a great guest, our buddy Randy Lurch. I want to put out a couple news articles that I think are pretty interesting stuff. From the Collateral Consequences Resource Center, public opinion and the politics of collateral consequence policies, they find that Americans generally oppose benefit restrictions, though support for these policies is higher among people with higher levels of racial resentment. So what they're saying is most people don't want to restrict people in recovery or who are coming out of prison who have paid their dues. Most people don't want those restrictions, which is good. If you want to read more about these articles, go to Collateral Consequences Resource Center. Here's some other interesting stuff. National Association of State-Controlled Substance Authorities. Here's a couple articles. The California Department of Justice recently awarded Bamboo Health the contract for prescription data collection services for the Controlled Substance Utilization Review and Evaluation Systems. I don't really know what that means, but it sort of sounds good. Here's another one. Many Medicare beneficiaries are not receiving medication to treat their opioid use disorder. Although nearly 1 million Medicare beneficiaries were diagnosed with opioid use disorder in 2020. Less than 16% of them received the necessary medication to treat their disorder, according to a new report by U.S. Health and Welfare, whatever that is.
That's not good.
Horrible.
Very bad. Yeah, I was not aware of that. And you know, these, especially like some of the things like Vivitrol that are real expensive, I'm just wondering how much that's available for people with, you know, state and federal insurance. So, I guess things got to be changed, right, Gare?
They have to be changed. Are they changing? I think they are. But they are and they're not.
Yeah. And, it's not talked about, but there is a big issue with addiction with the elderly. You get people that are suffering falls and all kinds of devastating things from being in active addiction.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm wondering, is there an attitude where they're old, give them the pain medicine, what's the difference?
Yeah, and it's so hard to, you know, with so many physical ailments and so much going on, it's very hard to sort out. You know, it's very hard to sort out, you know, whether this person needs the medication for a real physical illness, pain issues, et cetera, or whether there's an addiction going on.
Absolutely. You're listening to Clean and Sober Radio. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campuses in Devon, PA, and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Hi, this is Randy the Blade Lurch. I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, we're back.
We're back.
We're back, and we have our dear friend Randy Lurch on the line.
Yes.
Randy, are you there?
Hi, Randy.
Hi, guys. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy and healthy New Year to you, man.
Oh, thank you so much. God bless me.
Well, you know, I felt so good when we spoke yesterday by phone that you were excited to be on the show. But, you know, we're as excited as you are because we respect you, we love your story, and we think you're a great guy.
Yes, and you're always a pleasure to talk to, and it's so interesting talking to a former Philadelphia Philly from the 80s.
Exactly. Randy Lurch is an American former professional baseball pitcher who played in the major leagues for the Philadelphia Phillies, Milwaukee Brewers, Montreal Expos, and San Francisco Giants. What a resume, bro. Let's get into your story, shall we?
I'm ready.
You're ready or you're Randy? Which one?
I'm ready, Randy.
I'm just wondering, how did you get that the nickname The Blaze? Randy the Blaze Lurch.
I got a great story about that in my book, God in the Bullpen. Larry Boa gave that to me.
We're showing your book right now.
Oh, great. Thank you.
And let me just interrupt you for 1 second. If you want this book, you can go on Amazon. It's a fabulous book. It's a fabulous story. Buy this book, please.
So Larry Boa gave that to you?
Yeah, what happened was I had one of my few good outings. I'm just kidding with the Phillies. And I came in, and Larry Boa walked up to me, and he says, man, that was really good. And he says, as skinny as you are, I'm going to give you a name. He says, your skinny's the Blaze, but you were sharp as a razor today. So your name is the Blaze.
Nice.
That's nice.
That's really cool.
You know, you've really made it when somebody gives you a nickname. You know,
absolutely. When it's a good nickname,
too. Good nickname.
Right?
Yeah. So, Randy, you're from California. Tell us about your upbringing first.
I was from Sacramento area. I went to Cordova, California, and it was kind of a country boy where my dad I was a fire chief, and he went to Cordova Fire Department, and he taught me, I loved sports, and he was a semi-pro baseball player, and he took me out, started teaching me the ropes and the good fundamentals of baseball, and I just fell in love with it. Grew up as a family thing with two other brothers and a sister, all very sports-minded family, and we just like a lot of American families, they moms and dads just run around to different ball games, sporting events for the kids. And we did that. We grew up as a sports family.
And did you know at a young age that you had a special gift? I mean, was it in junior high school or high school? When did you know that you were different from the other kids?
I think it was Little League. I was able to throw the baseball really hard. Mm-hmm. And when I was 11 years old in Little League, I made the Little League All-Star game, and I threw a no-hitter in the All-Stars. And then when I was a 12-year-old, I actually pitched the perfect game, and that was my first on-the-air radio show, or I should say, interview, because during one of the before one of the games, they called me out after my performance as a 12-year-old, and so I couldn't believe it. In front of all these fans out there, they interviewed me. I was scared to death, but they wanted to know how I threw so hard.
I mean, because you're not a big guy. Obviously, you got that a nickname, but you had a strong arm, correct?
I kind of whipped the ball. There's some pitchers in the major leagues that they. I was just like a big wet noodle whip, I guess. I wasn't like, Tom Seaver and guys like that. They would drop and drive, and they used their legs more. And for me, I whipped my arm through the motion, and it got there in a pretty big hurry.
You know, I want to ask you a question. I've always wanted to ask a pitcher this, but I never really knew a real pitcher. How did you learn how to throw a curveball, a slider, whatever else ball? Is it for real? Is that the where you position your hand on the ball? How does that work?
That's a great question, Gary. What I did is it's one of the older kids or the older players. I said, how do you throw that curveball you're throwing? And he said, well, you hold it like this. And so I just kind of in my mind came up with it and started just practicing. And the ball was, I wanted to throw it where it was going to drop, it was going to kind of go downward, and I just kept messing with it and ended up with a real good curveball. So I didn't throw anything but a fastball and a curve until I had to learn a slider. Once I got towards the major leagues more, I needed another pitch.
And as a pitcher, did you make a decision what type of ball you were going to throw, or does the catcher tell you what kind of ball to throw?
When we were coming up, Bob Boone was such a great catcher, and I looked up to him. So I pretty much went with Boone. Boone would throw down the signs, and I would pretty much win with him. It wasn't very often where I would stay. So Bob Boone would call the game, and then if I didn't like what he called, I would take him up. That wasn't very often. He was obviously Bob Boone was a great, great player. I remember one time it was kind of funny that I finally learned to change up, and I couldn't figure out how to disguise the pitch. So I had a deal where I would make a sign with just the catcher. This time it was in Montreal, and Barry Foote was catching me. And when we had this one, the Phillies had Pete Rose. And I didn't realize that the guys, even when I'm throwing a changeup, they tried to, they would position themselves on what pitch I was going to throw. And I only told Barry Foote what was going to come, and I threw a changeup. Pete had me positioned for a fastball where he was looking more for the hitter to be behind it more, and the hitter ended up pulling it down the line. And I remember Pete, he was mad as a hornet. He went into Danny Ozark and told him, he said, man, Lurch, what's Lurch doing throwing stuff without telling us what's coming? So of course, it was Pete Rose that said that, so I stopped that stuff in a real big hurry and let everybody know what I was throwing.
Yeah. Hey, Rand, are you on a Bluetooth or something? There's a little bit of echo and kind of other noise.
Let me try that. I am.
Okay.
So how's that, Gary?
Much better.
Mark and I are smiling now. Perfect, man.
Okay. You know what? I thought something was going on.
What's this?
So here we go.
Okay. So, hey, to our listeners and viewers, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Randy Lurch.
The Blaze.
The Blaze, the former Major League Baseball pitcher. And if you want to talk to Randy, here is your choice. Here's your chance. Give us a call, 1-888-329-3306. We're back with you, Rand. That's better. That's much better. So, okay. How did you get into the major leagues?
I was a kid that was so into baseball. It was always that we watched the game of the week. I watched the game of the week. I remember it was Tony Kubek and Joe Garagiola in those days. And it was a ritual on Saturdays that my dad, being such a fan, and we grew up at, as Giants fans. So I was Willie Mays was my idol, and with Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, Jimmy Davenport, Juan Marichal, they had some great teams in those days. And I ended up watching the games all the time, and I told my dad, I said, Dad, I want to be one of those guys one day. Are those guys any good? And my dad says, son, he says, Randy, he says, all those guys are good. And if you practice real hard, you might be able to make it one day, but it's going to take a lot of practice, and you're going to have to work harder than everybody else if you want to get better. So I made it my dream to do that, and I worked my way up through Little League, high school. Our high school baseball team had two number one draft choices in the country. One of them was Jerry Manuel, who was the manager of the Chicago White Sox and manager of the year. Another was named Mike Ondina, but we had like five guys that played the 2 years that I was there that played in the major leagues. And you guys might remember Dusty and Vic Baker, Dusty, the Bakers were rivalries of ours. So I worked up to do real well. I lost one game in my junior and senior year in high school, was drafted by the Phillies, and I spent 2.5 years in the minor leagues. And at 20 years old, I pitched my first major league game for the Philadelphia Phillies.
Last week I was at lunch with a friend of mine, and Bill Giles was sitting at the next table. You remember Bill Giles?
Man. what a nice guy.
What a sweetheart. I went up to him. He remembered who I was from years ago. Just a class act. And I thought of you, actually. I was going to bring up your name. Then I thought, I don't know how you...
Well, that would be great, because I bring up my book again. I hope I don't wear it out, but it was in the book that Bill Giles, in those days, before he came into ownership, he was like the promotions guy.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember Gary and Mark, because in those days they had all these different promotions at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, and one of them was Kite Man. And I remember Bill Giles, he was promoting Kite Man, and
I remember.
Kite Man gets up like towards opening day, something like that. And he gets up there and he was standing up there with his kite, with his skinny legs. He looked like the old cartoon character Adam Ant. And the wind was blowing him around. Anyway, to make a long story short, Kite Man didn't want to go, but they told him, you've got to. Bill Giles said, I've been promoting this thing for months. And so Kite Man, he tried to swoop down and ended up just crashing headfirst into the upper deck in Veterans Stadium, and the Philadelphia Bluebirds booed him out of the stadium.
And that was the end of that, right? Right.
Yeah. That was the end of that.
That's funny stuff. So tell us the audience, what was the environment in the major leagues, the good old boys, and how did it start to define you not solely as an incredible baseball player, but when you started to find yourself in trouble with drugs?
Great question, Gary. I came up as a goody two shoes. If I had a beer after a game in the minor leagues, it was a rarity. But when I came up to the major leagues, the Phillies team was a lot older players, with the exception of maybe Larry Christensen and maybe Tommy Underwood, guys like that. And I really looked up to him. And one of the players, when I got there, offered me some greenies, and I didn't turn it down. And I took the greenies, and then I started drinking to go to sleep on top of it. And I got addicted. And to answer your question, it's a total different atmosphere in the major leagues. It's just, it just depends on the atmosphere. But I came into a team that was a lot older, and it was difficult for a young player.
Interesting. And for our listeners and viewers, greenies are amphetamines, correct?
Greenies are amphetamines. They keep you, they hop you up. And the reason I took them is because I just got extremely, really, really nervous before the games. And I hated that feeling, but it made me good because it made me cautious on the mound and careful and made sure I made my pitches. But when I took the greenies, it made me feel very superior. And it took that real uptight feeling on the mound away. I liked that feeling, but it took away my ability to pitch. And it's just a shame that I kept taking them, and it really hurt me.
It's interesting. You know, we think when we're in our addiction that the drugs are enhancing our abilities, everything. In the reality of it is, they're not. It's a detriment, and sometimes it takes a long time for us to realize the damage that these drugs are doing to us. Right, Mark?
Doesn't it stink when you finally figure that out way too late? They call it positive expectancy, where, well, this is helping me. And when did you first start to see that it wasn't helping you, Randy?
Not until after I got out of the game, and that was the problem. A lot of us addicts, we don't see what it did to how it damaged our life until we get out of it. And now that I look back and see what it did as far as the relationships you cost and the people you hurt, here I am. I've been sober for over 5 years now, but I drank for 40. And until I got clean and sober and was able to see out of my eyes in a new light, it's sad. I didn't realize that. Thank God it didn't kill me, but it sure could have.
Yeah, we just don't understand that. When we're in it, we don't understand it. And that's the trick that is played on us. When we think we think it's doing us good, you know,
and that's the reason I wrote the book, is because I was so happy that I was given another chance, especially the cirrhosis. I was a walking dead man, and I just, once I got another chance, I wanted to see if I, in some way, guys, that I could share my story and hopefully stop somebody before they. Before they were addicted as long as I was. Of course, I'm still addicted, but I'm just not, I'm not drinking right now.
Right, absolutely. So, all right, we're going to continue our conversation with Randy Leach after we take the first break, and we're going to get into a lot of other aspects and facets of his incredible life. So don't go away. We will be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Don't let addiction rob you of one more day. Pocono Mountain Recovery Center offers comprehensive addiction treatment for adults. Depending on your unique needs, your care at Pocono Mountain may include detox, residential treatment, and an array of outpatient options. We also offer transitional living support and transportation for outpatient participants. Pocono Mountain is in network with most major insurance plans. Start your recovery journey at Pocono Mountain Recovery Center. To learn more, call 877-596-0223.
Hi, this is Bobby Rydell, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
We're back. Hey, let's go. Let's have a little recall, before we
absolutely
before we get back with Randy. Doris Morgan, Stephanie DePaul, Debbie Reynolds, Mimi Dorshu, happy new year to the best. Thank you, Mimi. Jerry Chanel is watching. Laura Story. Hello, guys. Happy to see for you in another year from Central Florida. Have a great weekend. I love Clean and Sober Radio. Thank you. Warren Crispell is watching.
Ted Klotz in the freezer in Minnesota. Good day to be free from addiction's grasp. Meeting tonight, a necessity to continue on my path.
Absolutely. Suzanne Duncan. Nancy Minnick, happy new year to you too, Nancy. All right, we'll get to the other people. By the way, I just have to say something. Randy, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I made a mistake, and I said Randy Leach, and what I was thinking of is Mark is a leech to me. I didn't mean that.
There's some truth to that, Randy. There's some truth to that, and, what can you do? I love Gary.
I'm only kidding. You know that.
Guess what? I've been called a lot of names and a lot of worse ones. I answered all that stuff.
So do
I, Randy.
It doesn't
bother you anymore as you get older.
So do I. All right, where were we? So major leagues, different.
Amphetamines.
You started to realize the damage after you were done pitching. And what year was that?
I retired in 1984. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you at least have some kind of a when you're in the major league, you still have someone to answer to. You have to be at the ballpark and stuff like that. But after I retired, I didn't know what to do with myself, and I just let's pick up a beer. Let's go. I'll wait till 12, and then first thing in the morning, let's have some to drink with your eggs, And it just snowballed. It got worse and worse, and all of a sudden, my belly started growing, and I said, man, what's going on here? And so I went to the doctor, and it's funny. I don't know if people know this, but when you have cirrhosis, the doctor can get a false negative on your enzyme test. When he gives you a liver test, it can make your liver look normal on your test.
Okay.
And so the doctor was asking me, how much are you drinking and all that when my physical, and I lied to him. Like a lot of us alcoholics do, and so he could only go by my blood test, and so he said, "Well, your belly's growing. Well, you need to lose some weight. Go ride your bike or do something." And it kept getting worse and worse to the point where I went from the 215 pounds that I was weighing normally to 255.
Wow!
And I was full of fluid. If I pronounce it right, it's called ascites. But those, I don't know if you heard, if listeners out there, they had to go in and they had to stick a catheter in the side of my belly. Mm-hmm. And at the hospital, they drained 10 liters of fluid off me. And I believe a liter is like 1.2 pounds or something like that. I might be wrong. And that ended up taking, they took 10 liters off of me, and that was only half of it. And long story short, by the time they got all the fluid off of me, I went from 255 pounds to 170, and I was a walking dead man.
Well, and besides your stomach being distended and the weight gain, Did you feel sick?
Yes, I did. I felt terribly sick, and it was always when I was drinking, I felt like, well, if I have a beer or two, if I'm hungover or something, it'll make me feel better. So I had no appetite. I was feeling horrible. If I'd walk across the room, I was out of breath, and you know, I didn't know what it was. And I would try to eat even a, believe it or not, even a half of a small taco would fill me up, and I knew something was real wrong.
But did you ever correlate your drinking and drug use to the cirrhosis?
Oh, I did after I was, if I understand the question correctly, when I was given, you know, when I was diagnosed with a cirrhosis, I knew that I had done that to myself, and that the doctor told me the day that I went to the liver specialist, because my internal medicine doctor told me that I had cirrhosis, and they referred me to a liver specialist, and that day they asked me if if I was willing to go on the liver transplant list, and told me that I could go into liver failure at any time. And by the grace of God, I've been given 5 years.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. You know, it's interesting. All the drugs I took, and I'm sure Mark, you too. You know, you can't just batter your body year after year after year and expect to get out of it without any repercussions. And I know for myself, I have some ailments, and I know they are a direct result of the amount of Quaaludes that I took. You can't do that to your body. You just can't get away. You can't play this game and get away scot-free.
Yeah, and you know, this is such an important issue, because as a clinician, we see this a lot with the liver issues, and it's one of the hidden things that people miss. Particularly females are even more, more susceptible to this. And some of the things, did you get a lot of jaundice and yellowing of the eyes, Randy?
I didn't. And that was rare. I actually, my belly got so, I was so full. It was like a balloon. It was just so, you just touched my belly, and it was just almost like it would spring. My finger would just spring off of it. It was just so tight. But what I did do is if you can believe it, but it was so tight in there that I couldn't even make a bowel movement, and I asked the doctors later, I always could, we don't want to talk about this, but I never had that problem, but I couldn't make a bowel movement, and the doctor later told me that my belly, there was so much weight on my intestines that it actually blocked me off. And then one thing that people don't understand, and one thing that I didn't realize, guys, is that cirrhosis is a death sentence. And being a big macho baseball player, you always thought, well, you know what, that people say, well, Randy, you're drinking too much. And I thought to myself, well, I'll just quit, you know. And then as soon as I quit, there's like a hangover. You don't drink for a day, and then the hangover goes, and then you drink twice as much as you did the next day. But with cirrhosis, I want everybody to know that if you drink to the point where you've damaged your body, which takes a lot for these great bodies that God gave us, but once you've gotten to the point where you've gotten scar tissue in your liver, and then the vessels, which is called a portal vein in your liver, which disperses all the blood, and you know, it cleans your blood and all that stuff inside your liver. Once all that dies, you're done. Your liver will not rejuvenate itself. And the only thing that's going to help you is a liver transplant. And in my situation, I just swore, I told my little Maria that I was going to do everything I possibly could to listen to the doctors, pray a lot, and hopefully that God would give me some more time. And it gave me time to write this book, God in the Bullpen, and it tells everything about that, along with my baseball stories.
Randy, so When you were diagnosed, was that it for your drinking?
The day that I was diagnosed, Gary, yes. I was diagnosed. The doctor says you have cirrhosis of the liver, and I was sitting in my easy chair with a phone in my hand, but I had it on speaker, and my wife, she's just a tiny little lady, and she crawled up in my lap with tears coming down her face, along with myself, because I knew that was it for me. And, you know, I didn't know how long I was going to give, because the doctor, you told me, you know, you're in trouble. And from that day on, which not a lot of people can do, but I promised Maria that I was going to give everything I possibly could to live as long as I could. And by the grace of God, I've gotten 5 years so far.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. The fear must have been beyond overwhelming. And, you know, I was just thinking, so at one point you're sitting in a chair and you're getting this horrific news from a doctor. And before that, you're running around the bases, you know, as a baseball star. And our lives take different paths, and it doesn't matter how famous you are, how rich you are, how good looking you are, you know, it's really health. And, you know, the phrase health is wealth, is a very true statement. I mean, you know, without that, we don't have anything. And thank God, Randy, you've been given a second shot, you know.
A second shot to make my purpose in life, to tell anybody that I can contact the dangers of drug and alcohol abuse. And I've done probably 50, 75 podcasts, written a book, and anybody, I don't care how many people it is, if they want to talk to me about drug and alcohol abuse and anything. I'm on Facebook, and I have over 3,000 followers, and I have personally talked or written every single one of them. A lot of the people on Facebook have questions about drug and alcohol abuse, a lot of alcohol, because that's what my main deal was, and I'll write to them, talk to them, do whatever it takes, because the way I feel, guys, if one life is worth my time. So I've written many, many people, and any of the listeners out there, if you want to get on Facebook Messenger, if you want to friend me, I'll be happy to talk to you, because if it can help you realize that this is just a dead end.
You know, Randy, not to negate your incredible professional career, but your real career and your real purpose is not throwing a baseball, it's saving people's lives, which you do. That's pretty cool.
That's wonderful for you to say, but I just feel so frustrated that my book hasn't touched as many people as I was hoping. I don't care about selling books. I just want people, because my book actually tells how it is, and how it is when you have the terrible withdrawals, how it was when I was in, twice I was in alcoholic detox. I was, my blood alcohol almost four times the legal limit. And I went into terrible, terrible withdrawals, and then into rehab. I've wrecked cars. I've done all that stuff. And I want the people to know that this is a horrible disease, and I'll help you live through it just by reading about it.
You know, we have a listener. Mark just showed me somebody, one of our viewers, Mimi Dorshu, just wrote, she just purchased your book just now.
Oh, great, great.
So we're going to hold your book up again. Look, we're in a lot of cities now. Hey, guys, in recovery, buy this book. If you're not in recovery, buy this book also on Amazon. This book, shows that, you know, besides the horror stories that we all have, there's hope out there. There is redemption out there. And get away from you.
Yeah, God in the Bullpen by Randy Lurch, Philadelphia Philly.
Yeah.
right? Well, and many other teams. So
yeah. So
and you know, it's not just, sorry to interrupt, but it's not just about the second part is as I grew to into my addiction and the cirrhosis and stuff. But before that, it's stories about me growing up. And there's actually some inside stories in there that no one has heard about of the Phillies, Tug McGraw, the 23-22 game and stuff like that. So there's some funny baseball stories.
23-20. I think you told us about that game.
Yeah, that's a good story. You know, yeah. I think people don't realize that famous people, such as Randy, are real people.
Yes.
They have the same stuff growing up. Yeah. As we all do. They have the same problems. We all have similar bodies, and we all have our good points and our bad points, and we're just people. But sometimes, Randy, I don't know, you probably had some people that you looked up to as a kid also, but there are so many people that look up to a person such as yourself, and you're giving them hope.
You know? Well, thank you. I was hoping that people realize that, you know, whether you're famous or whether you're, you know, you punch the clock 9 to 5, or we all have our problems, and you know, we all put our clothes on one leg at a time and pants on one leg at a time, and you know, we have our problems, and then we need to always go out and search for some help and realize that there is hope out there. And you know, for me, my hope is in Jesus Christ. I look to God, and he's never let me down.
Hey, Randy, I got a question for you. I've been dying to ask. What was it like? Okay. Yeah. What was it like to play in the old veteran stadium and above that to play in Philadelphia? I mean, what was it like with the fans? And, you know, was it a great experience? Was it tough?
I love this question because can't see me, but I have a big smile on my face because when I made the Phillies when I was 22 years old, I first came up when I was 20, but I made the team out of spring training, and my daughter, Christy, had just been born. So she was only a couple months old when we came off of the plane, when, you know, I had made the Phillies for the first time. And so I had a brand new daughter and to play in Philadelphia. Now I had something to compare to because I played with the Phillies and I went to the Brewers. I went to the Expos, all great places, and the Giants, but by far Philadelphia was the best. The Philly fans, they just loved their baseball. I'll never forget playing there. And I look back now, being 67 years old, and not that the players aren't great now, but the old school baseball, and I'm looking, man, you know, I can say that I pitched against people like Willie McCovey, Willie Stargell, you know, Dusty Baker, who inducted me in the Sacramento Hall of Fame. And, you know, players like that, Steve Garvey's and, you know, all these guys. And I was able to play against them, and what a great thrill to be able to say I did that. But Philadelphia, and I can't wait to come out and see you guys. You know, after this pandemic stuff is
absolutely
always number one in my heart.
Absolutely. So my awesome question is, I want to know what it feels like when you hit a home run. I don't know if you've ever hit one.
He has.
Okay, yeah, that's right, he has. What is it like running? What goes through your head when you're running around the bases and thousands of people are screaming in admiration of you? What is that? What is that? Because I'll never get that. So what is it?
It's indescribable. You know, it's funny. Before this show, I went to a doctor's appointment, a new doctor, and he said, "But could you hit?" And I go, "Oh, could I hit?" And then I told the story of the when we went into Pittsburgh, where we had 4 games to play. We had a 3-game lead, and you know, we lost a 29 doubleheader, so we had 1-game lead or something like that. Don't correct me if I'm wrong. But anyway, I pitched that Saturday in Pittsburgh, and we could have blown the pennant in or the championship there in Pittsburgh, and Willie Starter hits a grand slam off me in the first inning after we had scored a run. So I think it was 4-1. And I remember how ticked off I was. So Don Robinson threw me a fastball, and I hit that sucker over the center field fence, as far as home run I think he ever hit in the big leagues. And I hit it off the backdrop in center field, and then I came up the next time and I hit another home run. To make a long story short, I hit two home runs, was the winning pitcher, and we clinched the division title with two games left in the season. So, yeah, I was pretty jacked, Gary.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good day, doesn't it?
I would love to have that day, Gary.
Oh,
how about you?
Man. Shh, that's incredible. Hey, listen, we're talking with Major League pitcher, great Randy
the great, Lurch. The Blaze.
Yeah, and listen, don't go away, guys. Give us a call if you want to give to talk to Randy. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
All right, here's some more viewers and listeners. William Atchison is watching. I think he might be a new guy with us.
Welcome. Hi, William.
Stephen Fouch. Michael Morrissey. Colleen Kilkenny. I hate to miss anybody, you know that? But we got hundreds. Brian Martin. Amazing story. Amazing recovery. Thank you. That's what we want to hear.
Oh, great.
Mimi. Your shoe.
Right. Let me see who else. Edward Petit Claire. All right, let's get back to Eve Davis. All right, let's get back to Randy. Randy, let's talk about what your life is like now. I know you were given a really wonderful award, and you're working now with I think ex-baseball players and doing a lot of good. You're giving back. That's the name of the game, no pun intended. What's going on in your life?
Well, like so many people, the pandemic is hurt so much. And we all have to be careful. I have to be extra careful. I was one of these people that have the underlying conditions, and I'm in big trouble if I catch this coronavirus. But yeah. I'm trying to contact as many people as I possibly can to help and to be able to counsel them. And you know, I want the people out there to know, you know, this addiction's tough, and you can't just, you know, just go out there and throw your hat out and say, well, you know, I'm cured. Now, I don't want anybody to think that. This is really, really difficult. And this has been a lot of work, a lot of Maria and I, my special wife Maria and I working together. It takes discipline to be able to stop your addiction. And then it takes you to keep that discipline level going. So, you know, I get up in the morning, I read my Bible, do my prayer life. I work out because it's so important to keep yourself fit. I make sure that I'm eating the right way. So everything's a discipline to be able to get the rewards of quitting drinking. And of course, sharing with fellow addicts to be able to feel the rewards of people being able to help get through this thing has been my passion. It's my purpose And that's like when you call him a leech or something, Gary. But, it's been my purpose. Yeah. And if I can get out, so this pandemic will give us a break, my great grace from God would be to get out in person, share my story. So if anybody has any ideas, after it's all said and done, I want to come and see people.
You know, there's a difference our show is called Clean and Sober, and that's a phrase that a lot of us use. There's a difference between clean and getting sober, meaning how then you conduct your life after you have put down the poison.
Yes, it's everything, because it keeps. I'll give you an example. I use, and like Gary, I'm sure, and Mark, you always remember what you went through, the stages of your life, and I can remember how I felt. I was in rehab coming on Christmas Day, and I was almost coming to the end of it, of my stay there. I was in Lighthouse in New Jersey. Thank
sure.
God for those people.
Sure.
I didn't have the money, and they took me in.
Yeah.
And it was in South Jersey. And by the way, I when Christmas Day came around this year, and I most of my books, if somebody needs a book and they're hurting, if it can save their life, you got it. And what I did is I thought, wow, I was so lonely when I was in rehab. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go down to the local AA. Because I know those people are just—it's killing them. You know, they want to drink, they want to share, they want to spend time with their families. But it's tough being around people that are drinking and partying when you have an active addiction going. And so, I said, Maria, hope you don't mind. So I threw some books in the truck and or car, and went down to the local AA and. And I started handing books out, I said, you can't believe how thankful they were. And it just that the next major leaguer would show up and say, hey, I'm just like you. I'm a struggling addict, and hang with them. You'll get this done. It will change your life.
And you know what's nice about someone like you or Mark and I? We're not just talking a lot of nonsense. We've all been through it. So the credibility is certainly there when any one of us gives advice or not actually advice. We don't tell somebody what to do, but let them know what we've gone through and give them the hope to change. And that's what you do, Randy. I mean, and plus you have an added benefit because you have a recognizable name. And I think that it shows you that we're all the same, you know, rich, poor, famous, like I said before. And your message is extremely important. And
well, thank you. I hope I'm making a difference, guys. I think one thing that we always look at, you know, we hope that we can get better. We can get through this addiction and then quit drinking and then our life will change. But, you know, I think that if we all look to how grateful we are to have this second opportunity to be able to quit drinking, work towards it, feel the rewards of it, feel so grateful, and then it's enhanced when you can go back and give back to the others that are struggling just like you were.
Certainly a gift. You know, one of our viewers just said, Anthony Clark has 1 year clean and sober.
Congratulations. That's awesome news.
That's what it's all about.
That's huge.
That's what it's about, you know. So, hey, Randy, what are you doing this weekend? And not that Mark and I are going to visit you, but what does somebody like you do this weekend?
This weekend, we're finally, Maria and I are finally getting out and about, and we're going to check out a new church.
Nice.
We had a friend invite us to a church. I've had the opportunity to be invited to different churches in the area, and this is funny. This church I'm going to is one of the first places I talked to at one of the AA meetings. And it was the church. It was like a building next to this church. And I had never gone there, and one of the people that invited me to the meeting invited me to come to his church this weekend. We're headed to check out this new church.
Well, that's good stuff.
It's totally cool, Randy.
Yeah, totally cool. We really appreciate you coming on the show, Randy. You know, we don't just say this. Mark and I say it a lot. You're one of our favorite
Absolutely.
Guests.
Absolutely.
We think you're incredibly cool, and you have a great message, and we really appreciate you.
And we both wish we played baseball better, but, you know.
Yeah, well, that's
– Well, I've never seen you play, so you're great in my eyes. And
all right.
I can tell you it's not because we're throwing around accolades, but I just love coming around you guys because you're so positive, and we tell some great stories together.
Absolutely. So, listen, Randy, we thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll stay in touch with you. And God bless you.
Have a great weekend.
Same to you guys. Be safe out there and be safe to everyone.
You too.
See you, Randy.
Great guest, man. I love having him on.
Oh, love you guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah, love you too, man.
See you, Randy.
Wow.
He's so cool.
He's so positive.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and just has such a powerful message to put out there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's doesn't get any better than that.
Right. We've had so many people watching and listening today.
Yes, we have.
With so many great responses and comments. And he said he was at Lighthouse, right?
Yeah, he was at Lighthouse, one of our sponsors.
Well, Mimi Dorshu's husband is the CEO of Lighthouse. So
that's RCA, right?
That's RCA. It's Recovery Centers of America. That's good stuff. That's really good stuff. So, okay, we're coming to the end of the show. Another great show. We hope people got some information, learned some things. There's hope out there. Don't throw it away.
Get those liver enzymes checked.
Absolutely.
Right?
And remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available, Mark. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
System tries to bring you down.